drinking water.
Okay, I am unfamiliar with the story. I think cleaning up public drinking water is a good thing, and I don't know enough about their law to know whether or not there's a nexus between the source of the funds and the application of it to clean up drinking water. I simply don't know enough about their rules, but I can say from experience and personal observation that the amount of elasticity in deciding what public revenue can be spent for is an increasing temptation for politicians and becomes more elastic and vague with the passage of time. And so could there be the opportunity for money to be grotesquely misapplied? I believe there could be.
Yeah, and that was, I think, the point they were trying to make. They're saying, well, this really doesn't have anything to do with the environment per se, so you're probably using money that shouldn't go to that when you should be using other money, but they didn't do that. But that's California. This is Oregon. We'll see how it goes. One of the big concerns with 2020 is this WCI, which somebody finally said what that meant, because I didn't know. It's the World Climate Index, and it's basically the way you trade the credits back and forth. And so we're going to be tied to a state that's how much larger than us? I don't even know.
I'm worried about the immediate and short-term impact where some person goes to the gas pump in Clatskanie when this comes to be and discovers that the price of a gallon of gas has increased by 16 to 22 cents with it only going higher over time. And the argument by the proponents of the bill is, well, we want to charge so much for a commodity, gas, that people will use less of it or they will go out and buy an electric vehicle.
And that's going to do it for this week with State Senator Betsy Johnson. You can reach her via email at questions, QUESTIONS@BetsyJohnson.com. You can also find her on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest. If you miss this program on your local radio station, you can hear it after it is aired on those stations on SoundCloud.com, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, and at Senator Johnson's website at BetsyJohnson.com. And Senator, what are the best phone numbers to reach you?
The best phone number in Salem is 503-986-1716, and the best number here at the district office in Scappoose is 503-543-4046.
This program is sponsored in part by Moberg and Rust, attorneys dedicated to providing expertise with estate planning, probate and trust administration, and meeting your legal needs in the greater Clatsop County area. Info at 503-738-6380 or seasideattorneys.com.
Tomorrow night at Fort George, Astoria Visual Arts will put the fun in fundraiser. So come on out to support the arts and local artists while you eat fabulous food, drink handcrafted beer, listen to great music, and have a blast at AVA's annual auction and art party. There will be live music and plenty to bid on, including original art, overnight stays at hotels and B&Bs, spa packages, musical instruments, and a host of other great stuff. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, June 25th, from 4:30 p.m. until 9 o'clock. Upstairs at the Fort George Brewery on Duane Street, between 14th and 15th, in Astoria.
This announcement is part of Coast Community Radio's My Day program. My Day participants get a message of their choice aired 6 times in 1 day on our airwaves. For more information on how you can support Coast Community Radio through My Day and other options, please call the station Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 503-325-0010.
And you've been listening to This Week with State Senator Betsy Johnson on Coast Community Radio. It's time for Talking Story with Lynn Hadley. Stay with us.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Story. I'm host Lynn Hadley, and Talking Story is an opportunity to excavate gemstones of stories and experiences that color the lives of many flavored folks in our community. And today, our guest is Andy Sterling, artist of the 13th Street Alley mural. Andy comes to us from Texas and has acted as artist-in-residence at the Southwester in Seaview, Washington, and Astoria Visual Arts. She has her BFA in arts education with an emphasis in metalsmithing and an MFA in Sculpture and Installation Arts. Her work incorporates space and movement with a very topographical sensibility. Welcome, and thank you for coming in to Talking Story today, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am happy to have you here, and wondered if you might start by talking about your Texas roots and what role that plays in your artistic expression.
Wow, absolutely. Okay, so I was born and raised in a small ranching community in West Texas, just over an hour north of the Mexico border. And I do feel like the vast landscapes and sort of endless horizons and big skies and just being aware of that all the time, I think comes into play in the same way that being surrounded by large bodies of water here do. They provide that same sense of vast space. And yes, that definitely comes into play in my art making.
How did you begin your journey in the arts? Were you very young when you realized that was your go-to thing?
Yes. Yes. I don't know if I ever just realized it. You know what I mean? It always, I guess, is the best answer. My mom is really artistic and creative and resourceful and kind of Renaissance pioneer woman. and my grandmother's as well. So in my family, I learned at home to be a maker and a creative thinker. My parents are both resourceful and enjoy creative projects and making things. And so I think it's just always been part of me. Being encouraged by them to follow that and take it to a bigger step was, you know, the important part.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that sounds like very familially fluid, which is, when I see your work, it's very open and fluid. And you must see that as an important part of public art and art installation.
I do. I really love working in a way that's abstract enough that I feel like I can connect or provide an element for every person to be able to connect with. And so leaving things open-ended, leaving things a little bit visually abstract so that there's some curiosity left, there's some questioning, and people can interpret it in their own ways. I think especially when working in public art in a space that's going to be accessible and you want to be inviting to a variety of different people to try to leave things open for them to be able to use their own creative interpretations to spaces.
Which makes me wonder, are there any unexpected parts to the process when working in the space and in the moment when you have, like, public? I mean, I know I've really enjoyed walking by the mural that you're currently working on and just sort of seeing it unfold. And you're interacting with your audience and your art all at the same time.
Yes, and it's so much fun. You're very exposed. And so there are parts of that are challenging. I want to let people know, like, it's not finished yet. It's not finished. This part's not done. So to be a little bit vulnerable and to allow people to see you in the process, in the thinking process, in the this isn't quite right yet, but I'm getting close to it process, it's very vulnerable, but it's also really fun, and it connects you to the people who are going to be experiencing this space and the people who this art is for, you know. And so it's been a really, really fun process to be available for people to give me support or give me their opinions or, you know, just to have, you know, that interaction. And yeah.
Oh, well, no, that's wonderful. And it's your artwork is frequently so collaborative, and this is no exception. I know that you were mentioning a few artists who are working with you. Sterling Gorsuch and Darren Orange and Anna Weber
Yes.
are all coming in to add their personal flair and artwork to yes. What you're doing.
So to kind of answer what you had brought up a minute ago as far as whether or not there's been any unexpected parts of the process, every single part of it has been a learning experience. And so that does also just really play into that vulnerability of being exposed through the whole process. Because I'm learning what works and what doesn't work on a specific surface in specific light. If you've been down the alley, you know it's 150 feet long, it's 20 feet tall, and only 7 feet wide. And so those colors bounce back and forth from wall to wall in ways that you might not be able to anticipate. And so it's constantly a challenge. My brain is constantly being challenged by this process.
Well, and the light angle of the light has to be affecting that as it changes throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, every single type of weather makes it look completely different in there, which is great. It's interactive. And yes, I realized how much, well, working collaboratively has always been part of what I do as an artist, pulling musicians and dancers and then other artists that with, you know, mastery in a specific area that can really inform and enhance and challenge my work, or we can really play off of each other's work well together. And once I started working collaboratively with artists more seriously during, I think, grad school, I realized how much fun it was to get to that point where you're in your creative flow and someone else is in theirs, and you're experiencing that together. And each person you work with very differently. And you get to know them really well. You bond and make great friendships that way. But then in this project, you know, I love, so the design is mine and the color scheme has all been basically handpicked from locally sourced colors. So I chose all of my color palette from direct sources. I took color chips out and matched them to wood sorrel and pine and salmon berries and, you know, even the lavender colors we had were matched to the purple brick, the glass bricks that are in the sidewalk. Every color in the mural is locally sourced from Astoria. And I think that just, for me, that was kind of a cheater tool for me to help to get the color scheme chosen, because where do you start, right? But if you sort of just forage the colors locally, I felt like they would feel, they would feel familiar, even though they were out of place. Like the color, bringing the color of salmon berries into that alley. But it's a familiar color, and we see it all
very
the time.
Very organic. That's, it's right. Like a wonderfully organic process. And
It's been a lot of fun. harvesting the colors for this mural has been a very, very fun process.
Yeah, I love that. concept of like farming the colors out of the landscape.
Even the rhododendron by the Flavelle house even has its color featured in the alley.
So. That's fabulous. And that's got to all factor into the uplifting, energetic sort of...
All of those bright colors that we see out in... You know, every time we look out into the woods, we see all of those green variations. And so just bringing those in, because that's why we live here. All those colors, all the nature, everything that we have around us that's so beautiful. And just to bring that in and tie it kind of through. And then also, yes, I realized that bringing in some local artists who have masteries in specific items and the specific things that they do really well would just enhance this project so much and make it a whole lot more fun for everybody. My friend Darren Orange, who's a fine arts abstract painter, also is a contractor and paints commercially. And so I knew that he was the person I needed for the job to get the base coat color put down. And he just came in and did that so well and was so much help. That's something that he does really, really well and super professionally. My friend Sterling Gorsuch, he's a local artist that paints the trees. He can depict the trees of the coastline like no one else I've ever known. Anna Weber, I'm going to bring her in to do some gilded gold highlights on the very, like, the finishing phase of the mural. That'll even help just bring some more light in and just some more bright accents. There's a handful of other local artists that'll be coming in to help me do processes and line work and just get the process finished, too.
Oh, it's...
It should be a lot of fun.
Oh, undoubtedly. And I would just like to remind everybody that you are tuned to Talking Story on York Coast Community Radio, and we are here today speaking with the 13th Street Alley mural artist, sculptor, and art installationist, Andy Sterling. It's so nice to have you here today, Andy.
Thank you so much. It's awesome to be here.
I know your training interests include arts education. And do you see murals and sculpture and installation art as a way to teach in broad strokes, so to speak? Pardon me, I couldn't resist.
Yes. I think it's always been part of what I feel like the purpose that I want for my art making to be is to connect with people, public, on a large scale. So for me, whenever I got to experience that for the first time, sort of getting to the streets and maybe making art that wasn't necessarily through a gallery or through that real specific genre and just getting a little bit looser with it and some guerrilla art projects, some street art projects, getting together and collaborating with friends and doing some pop-up shows and... I realized how much fun it is and how maybe youth are not exposed to the avenues to get them into that and just the freedom to just make art and that it doesn't have to be formalized and it doesn't have to be education-based and it can just be you expressing yourself freely in the world. So as an educator, that's always the avenue that I take. I take a really informal but really expressive approach to my art teaching. I've taught in juvenile detention centers and then here at the Gray Alternative High School, and I feel drawn to teaching in situations where I feel like art as expression is very important for the kids. So yeah, it's really rewarding.
Yes, in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And certainly, like, as you say, expressive and therapeutic and just, you know, when you feel like they're not fully aware of other options.
Yes, I feel like my main role as an educator is to help them to break the ice and just kind of break that wall of fear for them to let them know that making art can be anything that they want it to be. And so, yes, street art and murals are definitely part of that.
It's got to be very rewarding.
Hopefully some of my students will be coming to join me on the process.
Oh,
in
that's
the last
wonderful.
Week. Yeah, just to help get some colors painted in.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, and if you care to elaborate on what brought you westward, I know you on your Andy Sterling art page, it says that you are westward ho. What brought you this way?
A westward wanderer. Well, let's see. I lived in Bellingham previously, a while back. My son was born in Bellingham. And although I moved back to Texas when he was pretty young so that he could be closer to family, I kind of always had it in my head that we would know when it was time to come back to the coast, whenever we, you know, felt right. I wanted to raise him out here. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's his native land, although it's not mine. He was raised on the West Coast, and I feel like I love it up here. And like I said, I do find some interesting familiarities between the landscapes. A lot of times people will ask me how I'm adapting, because it is so different. I grew up in a very dry, where, you know, there's shrub brush and cactus and maybe some oak trees. But yeah, lots of bare space. But I, you know, it's the same, the water provides that same vast landscape for me. It's very comforting.
Well, good.
I would love some sunshine, but I think we're going to get some today.
Let's hope so. Let's plan on it.
Somebody told me that.
Yes. And you participated in some artists in residence programs. What do you find influential with that artistic process, or does that allow a certain something that working on your own doesn't give you?
Yes, absolutely. So I haven't, since finishing grad school over a decade ago, I have not had the isolated, purposeful time that I've set aside for making art the way that I did when I was doing those residencies. So I had the Astoria Visual Arts residency for 4 months and then applied for an extension and got it for another 4 months. So 8 solid months of studio space. I was right on the river, so with windows that look right on to the water, and really just the support and space and time to make art. It was incredible. I wouldn't have given it to myself. You know what I mean? But whenever it's set aside purposefully like that, and it was such an honor, and there was a lot of support from the community to help me be able to focus some time on making art. Once you becoming a mom and doing other things, and I always have made art, but I've never really pushed it the way that I have since moving to Astoria. This community has been so supportive.
Don't we have insanely creative community?
Yes, and supportive. Everybody just supports each other, and it just goes around. Yes.
It is.
So cool.
It's a wonderful thing. I'm glad you're a part of it.
Me too.
And not only do you collaborate with other artists, but you also include a lot of that you were talking about. There's the fluidity and movement and music and a rhythm in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it that you construct those layers?
Oh, wow.
Not to pose as a stumper.
That's a stumper. That's a legitimate stumper. Let's see. Well, whatever I'm hearing definitely does play into what comes out in my hands when I'm making, when I'm doing line work. I have found that working larger, where my body can move more fluidly, that plays a lot into how my line work layers in. You can evoke moods really easily with lines. So a line that has a movement that's erratic or fast or, lots of movement or rigid movement, sharp angles, really it evokes a different emotion than a very gradual, smooth, subtle, rolling wave. So I've found it really interesting and fun to just focus on making line work. And trying to really just master that and get good at the illusion of creating. I'm sculpturally trained, and so to come and start working in two-dimensional form is very new to me. Painting on a wall is pretty new to me. I'm more three-dimensionally trained. So for me, I'm trying really hard to try to figure out how to create the illusion of depth and the illusion of space and movement on a two-dimensional surface. Yeah.
Well, the way it's so inviting, the way it's all constructed in the mural that I've seen as it's unfolded. It's and
that's the goal of this whole design, really. I mean, I've always loved that alley. Even before I officially moved to Astoria and I would come visit, I just loved that space. Such a funny space, really tall walls and narrow, and it's such a connector. It connects what I kind of see as the craft, like there's Reach Break and Reveille and Pilot House and now the Whiskey Bar and all the food trucks and Fort George is over there. And then it connects to what I see as more the like retail side of business, downtown. People use it as a traffic a walkway for business purposes, but I also wanted it to invite people in as a space of its own, not necessarily just a throughway, but for an actual space for people to enjoy as itself. So the color lines that will go from wall to wall hopefully will just invite people in and give them a moment to kind of, you can kind of remove yourself from the world for a second when you're in that alley because it's so long. And then just have a little bit of a, you know, a whimsical, happy, transformative moment when they're in there.
Oh, absolutely. And as far as the lines and the movement go, I know I know that you've done video work too.
Yes.
Is that kind of in an art animation sort of?
Yes. So if you're familiar with my work, it's a series of lines layered on top of themselves. And so I would set up a photo rig, basically my camera duct taped to a board or something, and take a photograph each time I drew a line. And then just basically take all those photographs, link them together, and create a stop motion animation loop so that you could see the growth and just loop that.
Almost like undulation.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine, I got really, that was an easy process to get hooked on because it was very rewarding and beautiful and fun to do. I need to get a little bit more tech savvy and learn how to do it less MacGyver style.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's something to be said for the MacGyver style.
It's kind of always my go-to way.
You don't have to get necessarily one of those DigiPro things. Oh, but well, was there anything more you wanted to talk about as far as the inspiration of taking the organic elements and colors from the landscape and like you said, transforming it into the how it fit the alley and
the central kind of piece of the alley is super abstract, but it does represent rolling farmland in a variety of different green shades and then surrounded kind of by a mountain range. But the mountains were inspired by the riverbed rocks, the real jaggedy, sharp angled rocks. So I tried to bring specific elements in and put them in places where they don't quite belong, but almost. So the mountain range is really just like visually inspired by the piles of rocks. And then the line work is really representative of the rivers, but also tried to source, like, visually looking at sound waves. I even had some friends record laughter and looked at the visual sound waves of the sound of laughter and tried to mimic some of the curvature of my lines to look like those. And just really try to make it even the visual of a heart rate, a joyful heart rate, is embedded in the mountain range lines right there. It's just visually,
wow.
There's a lot there that I used as, it was just helpful tools for me to source, like, where do I start? How do I get this mountain range line up there? And so that was, I mean, it's there, like the pulse of, you know, the heart of the city, right? It's
yes.
Right downtown. So it made sense to use that. And it's kind of cool that that's just hidden, but it's there.
Uh-huh. It has to contribute to that energy, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Well, and we have the ribbon cutting is coming up very quickly.
Yes,
so
very quickly.
Do you feel about the limited time on execution and completion that's upcoming?
I feel good about it. I feel good about it. there's a lot of progress that takes place that you don't necessarily see on the walls. So there's so many things that have been stewing and brewing and getting ready to be finalized. And so this is the week I'm so excited about seeing some major changes happen quickly on the walls within, like, right after I leave here, I'm going.
Well, I know. I feel like I should wrap things up right away so you can get back to it. I don't want to keep
you. No, it's
going to
be a really fun week. I work well under this type of pressure anyways, but I really do have quite an adrenaline draw from these, like, really final moments where things are coming into reality, and it's finally the design that I created is coming into shape in a huge way.
Yes.
Well, but yes, the ribbon cutting is July 3rd. Yes. 5:30, I believe.
Correct. That's okay. That's what my sources
Great.
Tell me.
Cool.
5:30 to 6. Awesome. Coming up on Wednesday, July 3rd.
Yes.
And that should be a wonderful
It'll
thing.
It'll be a fun party.
Do you want to talk about any future projects on the horizon, or... Is this pretty much consuming your time?
Honestly, this is consuming my brain completely right now. There's other things coming, some cool shows coming in September, but I'll just focus on this right now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking with artist Andy Sterling on Talking Story. I'm your host, Lynn Hadley, and thank you so much for joining us here at Coast Community Radio. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Lynn. You've been listening to Talking Story on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're streaming on the web at coastradio.org. And now this.
Tomorrow night at Fort George, Astoria Visual Arts will put the fun in fundraiser. So come on out to support the arts and local artists while you eat fabulous food, drink handcrafted beer, listen to great music, and have a blast at AVA's annual auction and art party. There will be live music and plenty to bid on, including original art, overnight stays at hotels and B&Bs, spa packages, musical instruments, and a host of other great stuff. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, June 25th, from 4:30 p.m. until 9 o'clock, upstairs at the Fort George Brewery on Duane Street, between 14th and 15th, in Astoria.
This announcement is part of Coast Community Radio's My Day program. My Day participants get a message of their choice aired 6 times in 1 day on our airwaves. For more information on how you can support Coast Community Radio through My Day and other options, please call the station Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 503-325-0010.
And a few items from our community calendar, and then we'll go into headline news. And John Stevenson is in the house for a Lost Highway, so lots to stay tuned for. First of all, you can get your ham radio license this month. You can take a class at the Astoria Library. That's June 28th and 29th, this Friday and Saturday. All are welcome. No radio experience necessary. Students will take the test to acquire their ham licenses at the end of class. Testing is available for all levels of amateur radio. Classes meet Friday, June 28th from 6 to 9, and again Saturday, June 29th from 10 a.m. to about 5 p.m. To register, call 503-338-8884. The Astoria Music Festival presents Made in Oregon with Cascadia Composers, a program of original music and mixed media by Northwest artists. The performance will be on Tuesday, June 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Clatsop Community College Performing Arts Center, the PAC, in Astoria. For more information, go to supportthepac.org. And the City of Astoria Library Board will meet on Tuesday, June 25th at 5:30 p.m. The Astoria Planning Commission meets afterwards at 6 p.m. Meetings are at Astoria City Hall, 1095 Duane Street. Agendas are available at astoria.or.us. And the next Astoria Repair Cafe event will be Wednesday, June 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. They're located at 1010 Duane Street in Astoria. Repair Cafe are volunteers who repair, sew, sharpen, or give advice on just about anything in need of repair. Stay tuned for headline news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. President Trump today says he is imposing additional sanctions against Iran after calling off a military strike over that country downing a U.S. military drone last week. NPR's Mara Liasson has more.
President Trump signed an order that he says will impose hard-hitting sanctions on Iran. It will deny Iran's supreme leader and other top Iranians access to financial instruments. The president said he plans to increase pressure on Tehran so that they will never get a nuclear weapon. This comes after Trump ordered, then reversed himself on a military strike against Iran after Iran shot down a U.S. drone.
I think a lot of restraint has been shown by us, a lot of restraint, and that doesn't mean we're going to show it in the future.
President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the nuclear deal and placed crippling economic sanctions on Iran in the hopes Iran would agree to a different deal or change its behavior. But that has not happened. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.